Today, I have an interview with Idaho House Minority Leader Alana Rubel. But a note about this audio. We had some technical difficulties in the recording, but wanted to bring you this interview despite the sound quality being less than what we usually offer. So here's that interview.
First of all, let's just talk a little bit about the session. How would you characterize the 2024 Idaho legislative session?
Well, on the bright side, we got some vital things done that were kind of in doubt at the beginning of the session. We weren't quite sure where basic things like education funding and teacher pay and the launch grants, which will allow 10,000 high school graduates in Idaho to pursue job training in high demand professions. That passed by one vote last year. This year, also on a very narrow margin, it really passed because every Democrat voted in support. The majority of Republicans voted against. But we were able to, put some money toward road repairs and bridge repairs, some basic things we were able to get done. So that's good. On the negative side, there were some things we didn't get done. They killed the program for summer food for impoverished children. Just, a lot of kids get school lunches during the year, but they don't get anything during the summer. Was a program that would cover that the legislature chose to turn down. But I guess my biggest point of frustration was just that the legislature continued going down these very right-wing kind of culture war issues, anti-transgender bills, a bunch of voter suppression bills, things that the bills to try to shut down the ballot initiative process, attacks on libraries, you name it, and a lot of those ended up passing, and I think they're not very helpful to the people who are in the minority communities that are being attacked by those bills. So when those may end up in court, I hate to say it, but I hope the state will lose, because I don't like to see the government using its power to persecute minority groups.
Many of these bills seem to come up each year, or similar bills. Why do you think it's so important to the Republican Party to pass these types of culture war bills, as you put it?
I think a lot of it has to do with the closed primaries, because we see time after time when you pull the majority of Idahoans, these are not very popular ideas. 70% of Idahoans like and trust librarians and are not looking to fine and punish them for allowance or not censoring books adequately in some people's minds. Similarly, actually on women's health, the legislature is quite out of alignment. The majority of people I think were particularly interested in persecuting transgender folks and the LGBTQ community. But a lot of my colleagues feel that their electoral success rises or falls on the closed Republican primary, which is not determined by a majority of Idahoans, but is determined by about the 20% most extreme right wing who are showing up to vote in that closed primary. So they're really more concerned about keeping those people happy than what the larger population of Idahoans want. Now, if the primaries get open this year, there's a ballot initiative that'll be on maybe on everybody's ballots this fall, if they can collect enough signatures, that would open those primaries up. And that may change things a little bit and make the legislature a little bit more responsive to the desires of Idahoans as a whole, as opposed to just that small fraction that are voting in closed Republican primaries.
Yeah, that's a big push from Idahoans for open primaries and some other groups trying to get enough signatures. They think they have it, and they're just trying to get over that number and get enough in case some of them get thrown out. But how would that really change the landscape of politics in Idaho, do you think?
It's changed the landscape pretty dramatically. And I guess I would say not particularly beneficial to Democrats. I think it would, overall in terms of Democrats winning more elections, I'm not sure it will actually help us. Because in a lot of cases, Democrats actually win by having a more extreme Republican candidate on the ballot, and that actually drives folks to pick the Democrat instead. I think this bill will ensure that there are more moderate Republicans on the ballot. So I think, it will help moderate politics generally. First of all, I think it'll get more moderate people elected, but I think it will actually moderate the behavior of people who are already there. Because in many, many cases, I see folks who I would consider pretty mainstream, middle-of-the-road people, but who do vote for all these culture war bills, and they hate, they will privately tell you afterwards, that's the stupidest bill. I hated having to vote for it. I had to because of my primary. And so I think, even if you kept the same people in the building, I think it would limit a lot of that kind of extreme social right-wing stuff, because those people would feel a little bit more comfortable voting their conscience, knowing that they did not have to face a closed Republican primary. where, you know, where their vote would do them in, presumably.
Right. And that's interesting that you say, even if nobody really changed, that it would change the way you talk about bills and maybe different things would get passed.
Yeah, exactly. I think it would change things pretty dramatically, even if you had exactly the same people in office.
Speaking of that, this is an election year. Every seat in the Idaho legislature is up for election. You've been there for, 12 years in the...
10 years.
10 years. Okay. What does the next election look for you?
Well, you know, I'm in pretty good shape personally because actually nobody ran against me. So I'm running unopposed. But in the bigger picture, we've seen a really interesting phenomenon this year. There are a record number of Democrats running, more Democrats than I think we've had running in about 40 years. We have districts that haven't had a single Democrat running since the 1970s that now have, you know, one, two, or sometimes even three Democrats running for the legislature in there. So, you know, in the past, we had so few Democrats running that even if they all won, we would still be in a minority. This year, that's different. If some of those Democrats won, we could start seeing a much more balanced legislature. So we have a very, very tilted situation right now where we have every single seat at the federal level, every single seat at the statewide level has been Republicans for decades, and the Republicans have 82% of the seats in the legislature. So we have really nothing resembling balance. And yeah, I think it would be equally unhealthy if it were 82% Democratic probably. I think you want a little bit more of a mix so that you have to have discussion and compromise and people really thinking through bills, not just having groupthink. But, you know, you can't win if you don't play it. In the past, Democrats weren't even playing. This year, there are 87 Democrats running for, you know, a total of 105 seats. So if they won or won any meaningful number, we could get closer to a balanced situation. So Idahoans have an opportunity this year. Every Idahoan in the state will have a chance at least to vote for a Democrat in the legislature. And again, something closer to balance, I think, would change things very much in there. We would see a lot more focus, I think, on the fundamentals of governing and education and roads and healthcare, and a lot less of the bills on kind of going after the LGBTQ community and going after librarians.
Yeah, this legislature, 2024, saw a huge number of bills. 680 bills and resolutions and whatnot is what I counted. Maybe it was even more. Why do you think there was just so much legislation being presented?
I think some of it is an election year and everybody wants to go have something to go home and brag about. Some of them were really the same bill being reintroduced multiple times because there was some problem with them or some pushback on the, you know, the library bill, for example, that finally passed. There were five versions of it. And that one's evolved over years from, you know, jailing librarians to fining librarians, to, you know, fining them different amounts of money. So some of them are the same bill, but I think a lot of these folks in their closed primary elections wanted to be able to say that they, you know, they brought a bill to go to persecute, to go after librarians if they don't lend the right kind of books that they want lend out or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it is election pressure, and some of it was just getting bills right, or at least getting them to the point where they could get enough support to pass. I mean, I had a bill actually that I had introduced in four different forms before it finally passed that was on deep fakes in elections. So this is why, you know, with all this new AI technology, you can do unbelievable things with deep fakes where you can impersonate a candidate and have them say and do things they never said or did, which you can imagine would wreak havoc in elections because people think that a candidate said something they never really said, or you could send out videos or audios of a candidate thing, oh, I've decided to drop out of the election and endorse my opponent, so please go out next Tuesday and vote for my opponent. I mean, that would basically be a way to completely steal elections. And that one, you know, I had to go through several times because there were some groups that said, oh, you know, we oppose this. We don't want her to steal images. We don't want her to include audio. We don't want her to include this or that. No one has to disclose in large font if it is a fake video. So I kept having to soften the bill more and more because it was getting a lot of opposition from the Freedom Foundation, which got me worried about what they're planning to do in elections if they're so worried about the ability to use deep fakes. So keep your eyes peeled on what's coming your way on that. But things may not be what they appear this year in terms of what you think a candidate actually said or did.
Yeah, it's such a worry, AI and how people use it. And you don't know what's going to come next.
Oh, yeah. I was just saying, you know, we were just nibbling around the edges of it. And I think that we didn't go nearly far enough in terms of figuring out all the havoc this is going to cause in terms of fraud in every sphere, not just elections, but, you know, stealing. It's a great way to steal people's money, right? Just to pretend that, oh, this is your son calling and I've just been put in jail and you need to rush $50,000 right away. Or, you know, there's an almost infinite capacity for mischief with this AI and deep fake technology.
Yeah. You mentioned the library bill a few times, and I know that bill has had so many different versions. Do you think ultimately this was a good compromise bill where the governor vetoed it last year and they made some changes this year? Or do you think there shouldn't be anything similar to that? Or what are your thoughts on it?
I mean, my personal thoughts are this is complete nonsense. This thing was not really originating in Idaho. This is what we've seen in recent years is this increasing trend toward out-of-state bills that are being pushed by what I call bill mills, which are basically these very ideological, usually located far, far away. And they come up with a thing that works everybody in a frenzy and they start shopping it all around the country. And you'll see it pass in Texas on Monday and Arkansas on Tuesday and Tennessee on Wednesday and Idaho on Thursday. And the library bill is very much one of they're shopping it in every red state. There was not a darn thing wrong in Idaho. There was not a single person that you could talk to that could actually say, oh, my child was given porn in the library. It was an absolute non-issue that was completely ginned up to try to generate some hysteria and activism and let some people fundraise off it and make some people get to look to their constituents like they're saving the children. But there was nothing to save the children from in this case. The libraries were operating just perfectly fine. And frankly, this bill does a lot of harm because one of it defines harmful to children as any book that references homosexuality. So any book with a gay character now has to be, you know, can't be accessed by kids under 18 in a library. And, you know, newsflash, there are gay kids under 18 in the world. And it can be very helpful for them to read these books and feel like they're not alone in the world and have a, you know, an experience they can relate to in a book. And, you know, so the librarians who testified against this were saying, you know, some of these books save lives. I mean, some of these books, by creating that feeling that they're connected, can actually save some of these youths who are otherwise, you know, at serious risk for suicidal ideation sometimes. And the librarians, of course, don't appreciate being chased with, you know, fines and penalties. We've lost a lot of librarians, and a lot of librarians are looking at either retiring early or leaving the state because they just want to instill kids with a love of reading and find a book that will be good for them and interesting to them. And they really don't appreciate a situation where now, if they lend a book that some parent, you know, doesn't like, and there's really no clear standards for what this is, really any complaining parent can come in and, you know, they don't want to have to be hauled into court and sued. So I think this thing was very harmful. It was, I guess, less disastrous than the early version where they were going to actually lock librarians in prison for a year. Still, fining librarians, I just think, is totally unnecessary and very unhelpful. And again, this was really not an issue that even existed. This was something that was ginned up by an out-of-state, far-right ideological group that just, you know, pushed and pushed and pushed until they got it through.
Yeah. I think this bill kind of highlights, maybe this is inside baseball, but kind of the process, a bill gets introduced and then there's testimony on the bill. I know this one had a lot of testimony against it, yet Republicans, majority of them voted for it. Just walk me through the process. What is it like for a legislator listening to testimony and then deciding how they're going to vote on a bill? Like, how much sway does that testimony have on you when you hear it in a committee? Has it ever changed your mind about a bill?
Oh, very much so. I have definitely been swayed by testimony. I mean, this was one where it was very, very lopsided. And I think 38 people testified in the Senate committee. 37 of them testified in opposition to the bill. But only one person testified in support, and yet they passed it. And again, I think it was because they were doing, you know, the folks who sat on that committee were doing a calculus, and they were thinking like, okay, if I'm going to make it through my close Republican primary, again, it doesn't necessarily matter what the majority of people think. They're thinking, what are the majority of voters in that close primary thinking? And they were, you know, making the bet that those voters would reward them for voting for this bill. And I think a lot of those folks privately knew this was a bad idea and not a very good bill, but they thought, if I don't, I'm going to get attacked. Somebody's going to come out with some demagoguing nonsense about how, oh, they want to corrupt the children and they want to extend the children pornography, which is nonsense. But when somebody runs those attacks against you, you know, it's hard to get people's attention to defend yourself. And it's, you never know when some of that false information is going to take root against you and cause you to lose your election. So I think they thought the safer path was just to give the right wing what they wanted on this one and you know, figure, well, maybe it'll get stopped in the courts at some point. The governor didn't like it either. I mean, when he signed it, he said, "I signed that stinking bill."
Right.
But yeah, but again, but we have entered into a very different era of Idaho politics than what I entered in 10 years ago, as I said. I mean, when I started, you would bring bills based on what your constituents actually brought you, based on actual problems in your community. So, for example, I was approached by a mom who had 3 deaf kids and insurance wasn't paying for her kids' hearing aids. And so she came to me and said, "Hey, this is a real problem in Idaho. Insurance companies aren't paying for kids' hearing aids." And so I brought a bill that called for insurance companies to pay for deaf kids' hearing aids. And it was something that was, really rooted in Idaho, in an Idaho problem brought to me by an Idaho person. I mean, now overwhelmingly what we bring has nothing to do with any problem in Idaho. It's being driven, as I said, by some upstate group that thinks they have a really great idea that they want to start shopping and passing in all the states. They're kind of these what do they call them? Well, just basically cookie cutter pre-written bills from out of state. And sometimes those are not very good ideas in those bills, and they actually do a lot more damage, and they were not ever responding to any real problem.
Yeah. Let me ask you this question to kind of follow off of that. The Idaho legislature does not have a constitutionally mandated end date. And I know there's a, well, we hope to end by type of thing, maybe by the end of March or whatever it is. Some other states around us have that type of end date. And do you think we would benefit from having that? Would there be fewer of these cookie cutter bills or bills that have nothing to do with Idaho be presented?
Think so. It is a funny thing. Just when people meet me on the street and say, "Oh, when will you be out of there?" It's always a funny thing to have to say, "I have absolutely no idea." anything. We have no clue when we're going to get out, if it's going to be, March, April, May, which is a bit odd. And we would get into less mischief if we were a little more focused. If we knew we had a set amount of time, I think people maybe would focus on the real things that need to get done and not go down all these rabbit holes that are being driven by people who don't really have a stake in Idaho.
Has there been any conversation about presenting that idea? I guess it would probably take a constitutional amendment for the Idaho Constitution.
It may, but I think it would be a really good idea to do that if we could get enough. It's hard to pass a constitutional amendment. It takes a lot of money and all that. But I think we do not do good work toward the end of session. It just devolves into a madhouse, honestly, by the end, where people are just throwing everything they can at the wall. People are thinking that, maybe I'll do this last minute thing or that last minute thing, especially in election years, because they're just wildly brainstorming for, what look good to their, the people voting in their closed primary again. It's not doing good things for the people of Idaho. I think it really would be better if we had a plan, got in there, said, "Okay, we have 2 months. We got to make sure the schools are running and make sure the roads are fixed and make sure we've done all the basic things we have to do." And I think it would leave less time for trouble.
Well, let me just ask you one more question, and I'll let you go. As you look back on the session, if there is one thing that you are proud of that happened this year, what is that thing?
Oh, goodness. Well, I'm proud of the number of my bills. I'm just a side note. I'm very happy about that deep stage thing. And I worked across the aisle with Marco Erickson, who's near your area, to legalize fentanyl test strips, which I think will be really helpful for stopping fentanyl overdoses. And we got launched through. So I'm very happy that we did some of those very good things. I'm very sad didn't do some things. I'm very sad that we're not able to add a health exception to the abortion laws, that we're going to continue to hemorrhage doctors the next year at least.
That was an interview with Idaho House Minority Leader Alana Rubel. I apologize for the audio quality on this one. We had some technical difficulties in the recording.